halfway through this Saturday's Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. The Jets and the Predators, 6 p.m. tonight in Nashville as the Jets look to get back on track as they're in the midst of a Central Division road trip that has seen them drop the first two games. Michael Hutchinson between the goalposts for the Winnipeg Jets tonight. Pekka Rinne for the Nashville Predators. This segment brought to you by Frank Zappia and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtor of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com or at 204-772-2100. Carrying on from a conversation we had on Wednesday's NHL This Week, Sergei Fedorov inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame this past Monday, so about 6 days ago, as part of a great group of Hall of Famers. Eric Lindros continues to wait to hear his name called, you know, to enter into the hallowed hall in Toronto. Is Lindros a Hall of Famer, first of all, in your mind? This is, what, his sixth year of eligibility, if I'm not mistaken?
Yeah, we talked about it, and I think he's a Hall of Famer. I think his attitude probably is holding him back right now and things like that, and people he's probably been, you know, not been very friendly to, and has that, you know.
I guess we should be thankful, Ezzy, that that's all that was playing on your computer at that point in time when each and every week you managed to do that.
I think the question, though, Drew, that we're getting to is who is the guy that you want?
Yeah, that's where I was going to, yes.
Who is the guy that you, if you're, and that's an interesting question to me. I mean, Sergei Fedorov was a dynamic player. He was great speed, and he was a tremendous two-way player. I mean, Scotty Bowman would throw him back to defense occasionally.
Mm-hmm. Said he would be a Norris Trophy winner if he played defense.
Probably. Move the puck, pass the puck, and all that. But Eric Lindros, you asked because these were kind of the dominating centers in the 90s, for a shorter period was a more dominant player, I thought, than Sergei Fedorov was. So that's what I find interesting. What kind of style and what kind of style was being played in the 90s versus what kind of style is being played now. I mean, Lindros could also skate for a guy that big and was physical. So, I mean, I have a tough time with this. Like, he wasn't as good defensively as Fedorov was.
You have one guy who sort of burnt out and one guy who sort of faded away.
Yeah, Fedorov kind of faded away with Washington and Columbus and Anaheim there for sure.
Which of the two, Ezzy? Well, not that you actually ever answered that question, Richard.
Well, I mean, I guess if you're asking me for one game, I wasn't the biggest Lindros fan, but I respected how dominant he was, so I'd say probably Lindros. But maybe for the course of a season, and if he wouldn't grade on you and certain things like that, probably Fedorov. He'd help you in more areas, I think.
What about the 97 before? These two guys, I mean, they faced each other in 97 in the Cup Finals.
Yep.
You know, and we all remember that was the year that, you know, Terry Murray sort of threw his team under the bus after Game 3, and Lindros was asked about it, and he sort of ran away from the media, and it's, you know, sort of an indelible image that you can still remember him walking away from the media and not really, you know.
They were done anyways.
I know they were done. I know they were done. But, I mean, you know, they went out meekly in a four-game sweep by the Detroit Red Wings.
In which they were favored.
In which the Red Wings weren't that good that year.
If I recall, they were favored.
The Red Wings weren't that good that year. They weren't expected to come out of the West. This is back when the Red Wings were still in the Western Conference. They weren't expected to be the Stanley Cup representative out of the Western Conference. Does that jaundice your opinion at all in this debate, Ezio?
You're talking about the 97 team?
Yeah.
The 97 team.
Well, in 96, they only lost 12 games during the regular season. I know. So I still think they were a pretty good team. But let's stick to the...
They were third best in the Western Conference that year, though.
Right, but
behind Dallas and Anaheim,
it was still a team that, I mean, they won the Stanley Cup for a reason. Let's stick to the Lindros argument here, because Fedorov is a no brainer for me. I think he's the best Russian player of all time, and I know that a lot of Russian players before him didn't have the ability to play in the NHL. But I do believe that he was the greatest Russian player of all time, and I think it's partly due to what Richie said, that he was just as good a defenseman as he was a forward, and he was a really good forward. So you're talking about two guys that won the Hart Trophy, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So, for me, when Lindros comes into the league, he's surrounded by controversy, right? With the Quebec Nordiques and all that. For a 4 or 5 year period,
controversy of his own making, I should point
out. But for a 4 or 5 year period, he was the most dominant player in the NHL. Yeah, he was certainly the most dominant forward in the NHL, right? If he doesn't have those concussions, I don't think we're having this conversation. I think if he's healthy and he plays two or three more years, or certainly plays full seasons, because in the early 2000s he had all those injuries, you know, starting with, well, not starting, but when Stevens knocked him out in the finals there. Mm-hmm. But, pardon me, the Eastern Conference Finals. But it goes back to the comparisons, Eric Lindros and Cam Neely. Both of these players were power forwards. Both of these players had short careers. And both of these players were dominant when they were at their peak, right? So if you look at Eric Lindros' numbers over the course of his career, he had a higher points per game average than Cam Neely. His points per game average is top 20 of all time. I don't know exactly where it is. It might even be top 10 of all time. So I think he should be a Hall of Famer. Now, Richie mentions, you know, some of the off-ice issues and, you know, whether there's other things that are preventing him from getting in. I think
that's a case for sure.
I think that is
probably
a factor.
If he was a beloved media figure, he'd already be in.
Yeah. I don't think
he was a beloved teammate, he probably
would. I don't think
in.
You can deny that from 1994-95 to 2000, this guy completely changed hockey because there wasn't a guy that had that power forward element that could also score like he could. Like, Mario Lemieux was 6'4", 220 pounds. He wasn't a power forward. Eric
That's
Lindros
right.
could
right.
bowl you over mm-hmm. and then go score a hat trick, right? Like, he was intimidating. He was a bulldozer on the ice, kind of similar to Byfuglien in a sense that if you knew Lindros was coming at you, most likely you were going to go down because he was just so big. He was 6'4", 6'5", 230.
He just never won the big game.
He never won the big game.
And how much of that is – okay, let me interrupt you right there. How much of his the fact he never won the big game?
Cam Neely win a Stanley Cup?
No.
Yeah, but
– hey, if you're, if you're comparing those two, I hear it. If you're comparing him and Fedorov, I think it's different argument.
I don't think – I think Drew brought up Fedorov because he was just inducted. But the comparison to me – I mean, the parallels between Lindros and Neely – and I remember I wrote the article about this like 6 years ago when he was first eligible, because those two to me are such great comparisons. And Neely, of course, now is the president of the Bruins.
Yeah.
And he was a better goal scorer than Lindros, I think.
Yes, he was.
You know, his 50-goal seasons and all that. But Lindros, to me, I think had a major impact on the game and is one of the great players. And that's what we were talking about last week when Richie was in Minneapolis. The Hall of Fame should be for the greatest. And I think even though it was a brief greatest – he was still one of the greatest.
I agree with that.
You agree with the Hall of Fame argument?
Yes, I do.
That's fair enough. But
dominant players.
How much, you know, going back to the Fedorov versus Lindros discussion,
okay.
How much did the fact that Lindros never was able to win the big one when he was relied upon, when he was the guy, he was never able to win the big one, how much did that factor
that happened
in?
Three times.
Yeah? I'm saying that's a significant number.
97 finals.
Yeah.
They went out and swept by the Red Wings.
Yeah.
And he was shut down, obviously, by one of the greatest defensemen of all time. He was also inducted this past week, Nicklas Lidström.
Right.
When people didn't think that, people thought, if you recall correctly, that Scotty Bowman would match up Konstantinov against Lindros because of the physicality, and he went complete opposite and matched up a guy who wasn't physical at all and took away space, and Lidström, and he did a masterful job. Lindros, but you, and I realize the goaltending issue was the goaltending was a problem. They went both goalies in that run year, that run in 97, Garsneau and Ron Hextall. Both of actually whom are GMs right now. But he didn't get anything done, and they lost, obviously, a sweep. Okay, so that's 97. Mm-hmm. 98, he's anointed the chosen one by Bobby Clark. They go to Nagano. Canada loses. 96, the year prior to the Flyers making the Cup, which actually had been the preseason, because it's in World Cup, was played before the season started, and the Flyers went to the Cup in 97.
Yeah.
In 96, they had opportunities on Mike Richter, and that best of three against the U.S. didn't get it done. So to me, he was the best player, and determined to likely be close to the best player on all three of those teams. None of those teams won. I think that affects his overall legacy.
To his, you know, you got to point out he did win a gold medal in
sure.
2002,
I mean,
he was a bit player at best. I think
yes.
he took the opening faceoff there and barely saw the ice the rest of the game in Salt Lake City.
He wasn't an impactful player on that squad. I mean, it's kind of like akin to like.
Still probably, won a gold medal, though.
Yeah, but kind of like Joe Thornton in 2010. I mean, a part of the team, but not really. Thornton was more important, but not really a play. You know, a guy who couldn't win the big one, like Thornton, same thing. I mean, yeah. Riding the coattails on those is different than being the one who takes you to there.
Sure, it does make a difference, yeah. You know, you just sort of join a team halfway through and hang on to get your Stanley Cup ring. We see that happen a fair bit.
I'm just saying, Drew, and I'm a big Cam Neely fan. Cam Neely deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. I'm just saying, if your argument is that Eric Lindros is a similar player to Cam Neely, and using him as a comparison.
Yes, I agree with
then,
that.
Then, and I do think that's a valid argument, by the way. I think he can make a strong argument that he should be in the Hall of Fame. Now, whether he gets in the Hall of Fame next year or the year after remains to be seen. But I'm going to stick with that. I do think that he should be in the Hall of Fame, and there are things that are going against him. He didn't play a lot of games, but his points per game average, his mm-hmm. success at the international level, and if you remember, Philly was up 3-1 on the Devils that year, and then he came back and played two games and then got knocked out by Scott Stevens. I still think at that point in his career, he was a dominant player. Then, you know, he goes to Toronto and finishes his career in Dallas and all that.
Yeah, yeah.
And he just doesn't play enough because he had the concussion issues. But again, I think if he plays 1,000 games and ends up with 1,000 points, I don't think this is an argument. I think just because he only played 765 games and his career was cut short, I think that's what's holding him back right now.
He had 372 goals. I mean, again, we've talked about it on the show before. I mean, Fedorov was a tremendous player and probably did a lot more of the little things that you didn't see, like Lindros didn't. And that's not a slight on Lindros as much as that's a compliment to Fedorov's skill set,
mm-hmm.
ability to do multiple things and help your team in different ways.
But Fedorov was a smarter player, I would say. More subtle in his skill set.
Sure,
like you just
more
said.
Subtle, yeah. But, I mean, Lindros was, as he during that late 90s period, mid to late 90s, I guess, 94 even, about 93, really, 92, 93, to 98, 99, was as dominant as a guy as there was. I mean, this was after Gretzky's peak, obviously. I mean, Gretzky was still putting up big points then, and Lemieux just had won the Cups. That comes in after that, and when he came in, when you'd watch him play games mm-hmm. down below the hash marks, him and LeClaire, and it was Renberger, and they had Mike Manilek, whoever the heck it was out there with those guys.
Mike Manilek.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, was the other? There's another guy. Oh, we could play. Is it a Manitoba boy? I'm forgetting.
After
the other.
I mean, Legion of Doom was Renberg, LeClaire, and Lindros. Once you pull out Mike Manilek,
yeah,
you're
they,
on your
they,
own
they
here,
so
Richie.
Many other guys on that played shotgun with them. What I'm saying is, it didn't matter. They were so dominant below the hash marks. And you know, you talk about puck possession and things like that. I mean, LeClaire wasn't a great skater, is he? But you talk about the rules as they are now, when you can't even touch a guy without getting a penalty. In the mid-90s, when they were when Lindros and LeClaire were cycling below the hash marks, yeah. You could maul a guy. Didn't matter. So imagine how many points he'd have today.
He would have many power play opportunities. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll discuss Patrick Marleau. He's apparently on the trade block in San Jose. You're listening to the IC Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Minutes before the top of the hour here on TSN 1290. Drew Mundell, Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg, producer Rory doing his fabulous job behind the board. As always, this segment brought to you by Royal Sports. Since 1974, Royal Sports has been Winnipeg's number one hockey shop, plus so much more, like soccer to shoes to snowboards. For locations, hours, and more, check them out online at royalsports.me. Gentlemen, a lot of news coming out of San Jose earlier this week, as supposedly former Sharks captain Patrick Marleau is readily available in trades, something he himself did not deny as well. Here is the TSN Hockey Insiders discussing the possibility of a Patrick Marleau deal.
That as early as training camp, Patrick Marleau told the Sharks that he would look favorably on a trade and waive his no-trade clause.
You know, do you want to stay here in San Jose?
Yeah, I think I've been here forever. It's been a nice, great place to play. So it's always been rumors in my career, things like that. So that's where I don't really want to become a distraction or anything.
It's not a yes.
It's not a yes. It certainly was not a yes. He certainly did not deny that he would look favorably upon a trade out of San Jose. Are you surprised at the timing of this? I mean, you know, the drama around the Sharks was last year. We sort of thought that, the players are the same, but you sort of thought that, you know, Todd McClellan would come in and, sorry, Peter DeBoer would come in, pardon me, misspoke there, and sort of stabilize things. And it seemed like for a little while he had stabilized things in that Sharks dressing room, and there was no longer the controversy. You know, the team is average so far, 8-8 so far through their first 16 games. Are you surprised that these Marleau rumors are bubbling up again right now?
It's very early. I mean, as you mentioned, the San Jose Sharks are middle of the pack right now, Drew. They got a big win versus the Detroit Red Wings last night, 3-2. But the timing is a little bit suspect. You probably would have expected this type of rumor in the summer or closer to the trade deadline. And to me, that's the key there. The trade deadline, even though you still got 3 months, over 3 months until the trade deadline, Drew, it comes quickly, right? And do you want that to be a distraction? And by the way, Patrick Marleau, when asked if he wants to stay a Shark, didn't say yes.
Yeah.
So
that tells you he doesn't want to be a Shark necessarily anymore.
Well, you know, when you consider where the Sharks are at, and to me, I think there's more to the story. There's something else going on there. Because, as I mentioned, it's still too early to say that the Sharks are not going to make the playoffs. I mean, they're right in it. They're a few points out of it right now behind the Jets, right? I don't know exactly what it is, 2 or 3 points.
Yeah, but 3 points. They have 2 points fewer than the Jets
right.
do.
So Patrick Marleau and Joe Thornton, they signed those identical 3-year contracts, right? Not identical as far as the exact dollars, but
they're different names.
Exactly. 3-year contracts, right?
Yeah.
So this Sharks team, and Doug Murray, I imagine, is looking at Patrick Marleau and other players he can trade, because you know he's not going to trade Joe Pavelski, right? He's not going to trade certain players off of this team. Not to say that other players are untouchable, Richie, but Marleau's probably the obvious one. And you know, we talked about the Nashville Predators during the first hour as kind of being a possible fit for a guy like Patty Marleau. This guy's been such an unbelievable player. Speaking of players that have played their entire careers with one team, Shea Weber being another one of those guys. But Patrick Marleau has been, season after season, a consistent player. And sure, as he slowed down a little bit, but speaking of intelligent players, this guy's a very intelligent player, can play in all positions, shorthanded,
absolutely,
power play, whatever you need him to do. So I think the question then becomes, Drew, what can you get for Patrick Marleau? And I think you can get a lot. I think you can get a roster player and a draft pick for Patrick Marleau, absolutely. And if you're a team that needs a veteran influence in your top six.
But if you're San Jose, you just signed Paul Martin. You're still seemingly going for it, or at least trying to be a contender. You obviously miss Logan Couture on the second line with Marleau and a guy like Joel Ward. I agree as you're going to get something for him. I mean, how much do you get for a guy that's 36?
I mean, he's got a year left after this year, which I guess some extent works to their advantage. But that's my point.
It's a big cap hit to take when a lot of teams don't have cap money.
Yeah, he's got 4 goals and 5 assists for 9 points so far this year. I mean, he's still producing.
If he has Couture with him, his points are higher.
Yeah, he's still producing. So he's not like it's a terrible contract.
Yeah, and I think there's something that you and Kevin Kurz, by the way, has done an excellent job reporting on this for CSN Bay Area, and he was the one who broke the news that there are most likely 3 teams that Marleau would accept a trade to, 2 other teams in California, and then the Rangers, right? So for me, I could make an argument for each one of those teams wanting Patrick Marleau in their lineup. I think Richie, L.A. is still up against the salary cap, right? So I don't know who they move to get Patrick Marleau in there.
They need a defenseman. You don't let players determine what your game plan is, right?
Right. But Anaheim Ducks, even though they added some depth up front on forward, they're still struggling, right? They lost again last night to the Islanders. You can make an argument that you maybe move somebody to bring Marleau into Anaheim. Rangers?
Well,
they're playing pretty well, but you put Patrick Marleau in there, kind of plays that Marty St. Louis role in a sense, right? So I could see a team like the Rangers or the Ducks going after him, even the Kings. I don't know how serious these teams are about acquiring him.
Marleau, of course, has a no-movement clause, so he can pick and choose his destination. And so those 3 teams you mentioned, as are the 3 teams that are most linked to him that he supposedly would accept a trade to, Anaheim, Los Angeles, both of whom still Southern California, and then New York Rangers, because it seems like that's the only other option everybody would want to go to.
Greatest city in North America, right?
Yeah.
Aside from Winnipeg.
Yeah, very good. I just don't get the timing, like all of a sudden why this is bubbling up.
I don't know either. It's been a long time where the captaincy comes off and the Thornton controversy and everything else that goes along with Thornton not being the captain anymore. There's been a bunch of gong show periods in San Jose, new coaching staffs. He's been there forever. He's been there through Ron Wilson, Daryl Sutter, Todd McClellan, all that.
Mm-hmm.
Suddenly now it's a breaking point. It's a fair question, Drew.
Is it a relationship thing with Peter DeBoer? I mean, we're going to be joined by Curtis Peschelka of the San Jose Mercury News next segment, and we'll obviously ask him about that. But,
He can help you in all situations. I mean, the guy plays power play, penalty kill, and even strength.
Mm-hmm.
He can skate. He can play center. He can play wing. I'm not questioning how valuable he is. He obviously had an off year last year, but I'm not questioning how valuable he is. And maybe you don't expect the offensive production of previous years, and that would be hard to stomach because of the $6.6 million cap hit. Even so, you know he can be a useful player in different situations. And, I mean, this is a guy who's playing the national stage and has succeeded at the national stage. I think different. I think to be contrasted by his teammate Joe Thornton, who's able to play at the high pace that the top end guys are able to keep up in those international competitions. I mean, a team that I think makes a lot of sense is Montreal. Now, of course, you have to take into account cap considerations, but why Montreal? Well, I mean, are they convinced Alex Galchenyuk can be the second line center?
No, he's been a healthy. Go on.
Right, not Semin. Galchenyuk can be the second line center. Maybe, maybe not. Maybe they prefer him on the wing. Marlowe can play center and the wing, so you can kind of hedge there. He provides you with a size. You know, I mean, he's not the most physical player in the world, but he's 6'2", 220 pounds. But he can skate, so he can play the pace of game that you want to play. That, to me, is the most logical fit. I mean, Nashville, we spoke about earlier, that's another fit that I think makes sense. L.A., they need a defenseman. Anaheim, can they get any older? Right?
Well,
Chicago?
If you replace Sean Horkoff on the third line, he'd be getting slightly younger. But
yeah, and you know what, Drew? So I think Montreal and Nashville make a lot of sense. I mean, other teams would make sense if you'd want to go there. Will you want to go to the media market in Montreal? Where do you want to go to Nashville?
Even if he went to Montreal in the media market, he's not going to be the guy that...
That's true. I agree with that. I just don't know. I mean, he's picking teams. Sure, then you want to go to the New York Rangers because, well, it's living in New York, but they're also really good.
Sure.
Would he fit there? Yeah, of course he'd fit there. I mean, again, this is a guy that fit most places.
Yeah, well, I mean, and that's...
The Rangers, let's talk about the Rangers for a second. Are they going to give up another first-round pick?
You can't. For the health of the organization,
Yandle,
you can't.
You did St. Louis. So St. Louis, so unless you give him a first-round pick or a top prospect,
They traded their top prospect in Duclair.
But, you always have guys coming through, Drew. Then, I mean, okay, I don't know. I'm not that familiar with the Rangers farm team. Now, if it's Montreal and you give up a second-round pick, what, for Petrie, but you haven't given up a ton of your prospects, and, again, I don't know them well enough to speak as to which it would take, but maybe that's something you look at. But again, when you have a no move, he's got a control. I would just say, if I'm a general manager, I'm not letting a player on another team dictating my strategy for what's going to be lead us to a successful team. Like, if he says, I want to go to LA, that's great. And Dean Lombardi had him in San Jose, if I recall. He probably drafted him, if I recall correctly. So he knows exactly what he brings to the table.
Could you see Washington as a fit here? They have Backstrom, Kuznetsov is sort of their second line center, but he's still relatively good. But then you got Jay Beagle as your third line center, so you'd certainly like to upgrade offensively to some extent there, I would imagine.
I mean, I guess, Drew, I guess your other question is, do you want to improve on the size of a different style of Burakovsky and Johansson? Yeah, I mean, sure, he could fit. Again, this is a guy who probably, when you can play center and wing and you can skate and you have good skills, you can probably play anywhere.
Right. So, I mean,
but you're 36.
From San Jose's perspective, if you're trading him, and it sounds like he's on the market based on all the, when the player doesn't deny that he'd be willing to look upon a trade, I think to some extent you almost forget about the no movement clause because really, I mean, you're not trading him to the worst, the places where a player would veto a trade at this point in his career. You're not trading him there because they're not interested. He's a missing piece for a team that's looking to get over into the Stanley Cup Finals. So is he going to veto a trade to Washington for the next year of his career, a year and a bit of his career? Probably not. You're not trading him to Calgary. You're not trading him to Edmonton at this point in his career.
Granted, but yeah.
I know, but they're not interested in him.
Right.
Because they have no purpose for him. So you're looking, I think if you're Doug Wilson, you're looking and saying, I have a lot of options. This is a good player who can do a lot for a lot of teams. Ball sort of in my court in terms of what I can demand for him. Now, granted, he's a little bit older and everything else, but it's still a bit of a seller's market,
Wilson,
I think.
Doug Wilson doesn't want to trade him. Why? Because Doug Wilson would have traded him a long time ago if he wanted to trade him.
Yeah, well, apparently this sounds like a player who's asked for a trade.
Yeah.
Now, the question, of course, is why has he asked for a trade at this point after what seemed like the...
That's why we have guests on the show.
Yeah, which it seems like the off-season upheaval was behind them.
Yeah, Drew, and I know we're going to go to break right away to bring on Curtis Peschalka of the San Jose Mercury News. So I did a little research here. Last segment, Richie was trying to think of some other line mates that Eric Lindros played with. Mike Maniluk definitely played with Lindros for at least 1 year. And I don't know, Richie, if some of these guys you were thinking of, but I came up with a few names here. Jody Hull, Brent Fedek, Trent Klatt, any of these guys? I know these guys
Jody
played
Hull,
with...
Jody Hull, Brent Fedek, Trent Klatt, all right-handed shooting guys. So would have fit in well on the right side. But I don't think any of those guys...
Sean Podine.
Left side guy, left winger. Third line.
Anyways, those are some guys I came up
There's
with.
There's another name, though. It's not... I know, I looked through it, too. Mike Matlack played there a bit, but there's one other guy who played. Now, Pat Balloon, I believe, even had a cup of coffee there.
After he left San Jose, he went to Philadelphia. That's correct. Do you think that there's a local Winnipeg guy who started with either H or N?
Yeah, it's like Natrick or something.
Are you thinking about the golfer?
No. I'm going to keep looking.
Okay, you keep looking. In the meantime, we'll get Curtis Pichelka on to join
us. Mike Manaluk is from Winnipeg, by the way.
Yeah, I know, I know. He played there. He started the 98 season there, I think, on the top side. Didn't last very long, though.
Well, we continue our search for the line mate of Eric Lindros and John LeClair here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back, Curtis Pichelka of the San Jose Mercury News will join us, talk more about the upheaval in San Jose. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Two hours down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Drew Mindell alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program Curtis Pichelka. Curtis covers the San Jose Sharks for the San Jose Mercury News. Curtis, good afternoon, and thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, no problem. Good afternoon to you guys, too.
Curtis, obviously brought you on to talk about the latest rumors and innuendo surrounding Patrick Marleau. You know, it seems, based on the reporting that you've done and some of your colleagues have done there in San Jose, that he would look favorably upon a trade out of San Jose. Are you surprised at the timing that this is all sort of leaked out? You know, it's sort of been a relatively average start to the year for San Jose, a new coach in place in Peter DeBoer. Are you surprised that all of a sudden, you know, 16 games into the season, a month into the season, Patrick Marleau is looking for a one-way ticket out of San Jose?
Well, a little bit. I mean, you like to think that he's said in the past, I mean, last year around the trading deadline, he says, you know, he wants to stay here, but I think he said at the time, listen, if they don't want me here, then, you know, maybe I'm open to a change. Like, that was at last year's trading deadline. We kind of thought that they'd, you know, the Sharks would like to at least, like, you know, go through this summer, make the moves they made as far as in the offseason, trying to bring in a few players to improve the team, and kind of go from there and see how these guys can compete this year as opposed to last year. So, you know, apparently, according to reports, you know, by the end of training camp, towards the start of the regular season, you know, some people around the league, some executives around the league were aware that you know, Patrick Marleau, you know, could be available for the right price to the right team. And so it comes out, you know, roughly a month after the season starts. And it is a little bit of a surprise, but at the same time, you know, you kind of maybe sees the direction the team wants to go in. And if something can be worked out where he gets traded to a team that he wants to get traded to, then maybe it works out for all parties.
Curtis, we know that Patrick Marleau controls where he can go, and it looks like it's going to be one of three teams: LA Kings, Anaheim Ducks, or New York Rangers. Which one of those teams do you think would be the best fit for Patrick Marleau? And the second part of that question is, what can Doug Wilson get back in return for Patrick Marleau?
Well, I would probably think that maybe Anaheim would be the best fit. You know, there's, you know, he knows some of the players down there. He's not too far away from home. You know, he's set down roots in San Jose. His wife's from the area. He's got kids born there. He doesn't. You know, if he does get traded, I think ideally he'd like not to go too far away from home. So that would be a pretty good fit for him. I'm not sure what Doug would be able to get in return, but he needs to get a good return. I mean, I'm not going to say that his job's in jeopardy or anything. I think it's a little bit too soon to say that. But he, you know, they can't afford. I don't think they want to miss the playoffs second year in a row. At least ownership doesn't really want to miss the playoffs for a second season in a row. So they have to get good value back in return. Plus, you look at Patrick Marleau, and he's basically the face of the franchise, or has been, for quite a while now. And you trade a guy like that, you're already in a situation where you're not filling the building on a regular basis. Some fans are really starting to get maybe a little bit satisfied with what's going on right now. So if they make the deal, if you trade a guy like him, you've got to get good return. You can't just say, "Well, we're going to do Patty a solid here make him happy." You got to make sure you get someone in return to help your team win games.
Curtis, what's Patrick Marleau's relationship like with Peter DeBoer, and what's his relationship like, obviously more long-standing, with Doug Wilson?
I think they're both good relationships. I think Patrick likes playing for Peter, likes the system he wants to play. There hasn't been a problem there, and Peter said from day one that he's really grown to like Patrick Marleau. Mm-hmm. His work ethic during the summer when he would come in to the training facility there and work out and buy into what Peter wants to do. I mean, that's obviously a big part of it. So I think they have a very good relationship. We asked Patrick on Wednesday, what is your relationship like with Doug? And he says he has a good relationship with Doug. So I guess we'll kind of take him at his word there. I don't think he's, there's a real rift there or anything. So I think he has a good relationship with both. I don't think, like I said before, I don't know if he's really beating down the door to get out of town. But if there's a situation that can be worked out with both teams, maybe that's the way to go.
How much does that say, Curtis, about Patrick Marleau's belief in this team being a real, true Stanley Cup contender?
Well, it's tough to say. I think when the team is healthy, like they were at the very start mm-hmm. of the season, they clobbered the Kings.
Yeah, they looked real good, yeah.
And they played really well at the start of the year, and so if they get completely healthy, maybe they and. They could challenge, I think, for third place in the division. I don't think that's a stretch. I think L.A. and Anaheim eventually get the top two spots. I think third place in the Pacific is not out of the question. I think once you get in, anything can happen. I mean, I don't see a real clear-cut favorite coming out. I mean, I do think the Kings and the Ducks will end up taking the top two spots in the division. But right now, I can't say for sure whether there's going to be one team that can come out of this division. Now, if you happen to win the Pacific Division, of course, you're going to deal with whoever was Central. That's a completely different story. I mean, that team is absolutely loaded. So if the Sharks want to make the playoffs and give themselves a chance, I think they got to finish in the top three.
You look at controversies, and I mean, this team didn't reach expectations for many, it's been many years now, Curtis, and now you're looking at the past year, year and a half, even 2 years, there's been controversy surrounding this team, whether it be Joe Thornton or Doug Wilson, and then you change coaches. Is this team able to focus through another controversy?
It's amazing. I mean, I think if they start winning a few games, if they start stringing some success together, I think they can. I mean, maybe some of the people are just used to it at this point.
Yeah.
It's just maybe just part of the course or of playing for the team. But, if the more they win, the better, the more they'll, it won't be a distraction. If they do lose a few in a row, obviously then questions are going to start to arise, and it's going to be tough for the team to sort of put it away. So, winning's going to be a cure-all. I don't see this team getting on a real hot streak winning 10 in a row or anything like that. But, they string a few victories together. They stay in the hunt. I think that'll do wonders for them.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Our guest is Curtis Pashelka of the San Jose Mercury News, discussing the Patrick Marleau rumors and the Sharks in general. Curtis, looking back at it, when Joe Pavelski was named captain earlier in October, and then Marleau wasn't given a letter at all. They chose to give the letters to Logan Couture and Joe Thornton. Was that maybe the beginning of the end of the relationship in San Jose between Marleau and the team?
I'm not sure if it was the beginning of the end, but I think it was definitely, definitely one of the things that led to this moment. you know, he had been a captain for, assistant captain for over 10 years. And so when they, he said on Wednesday, you know, when that gets taken away, it stings a little bit. He says he's okay now. He's over it. He just wants to focus on playing hockey. And of course, when, you know, since Couture's been out, they kind of alternated giving that second A to Marleau and Mark Edward Vlasic. So, you know, Pete thought that, you know, Patrick Helm did very well when it first came, you know, when he first made the decision to give the C's and the A's out. And so, you know, I think it was part of it. I think it was like maybe he feels he's being a little bit marginalized. Maybe he doesn't feel completely appreciated for all the things that he's done in his career. I can't speak for him. I don't want to put words in his mouth. But, you know, when you do get – when something like that does get taken away, and I think it maybe sends a message that maybe you're you know, I think maybe it's just – could be a situation where they feel that, what he feels that it's it might be better to move on, kind of thing. So anyway, that's kind of what I took away from it when it first happened. You know, Patrick kind of, you know, one of my colleagues at the paper brought it up to him in October and said, hey, how do you feel about this? And he kind of said, well, maybe that's the direction they're going in. So you know, you take that for what it's worth, but he was upset with it then, but I think he's over it now, and you know, we'll see how it goes from here.
Well, you know, Chris, it's interesting to me in that you have a new coach coming in. He's going to establish what he thinks to be the leadership group, but with a long-standing GM and the history that Patrick Marleau has with GM, maybe there's no bad blood, but he's certainly cognizant of what's happened in terms of his maybe move down the leadership ranks. Isn't it a difficult position for Pete DeBoer to be in there?
It is. I mean, there's no question about it that, you know, guys came into the season, you know, obviously Joe Thornton came into the season. He had worn a letter for quite some time. Patrick Marleau came in. He had worn the letter for quite some time. But, you know, you've also got the kind of a younger leadership group that you want to maybe give them a bigger voice. You know, I think Doug Wilson talked about after the four game, kind of the collapse in the first round against the Kings, about wanting to sort of change. Kind of sort of changed maybe the culture inside the room a little bit. So he had, you know, so I mean, part of that is maybe trying to give some other guys in the room a bigger voice. And it would have been interesting too. I mean, you're darn if you do, and you're darn if you don't.
Right.
You give Patrick, you know, you give Patrick Marleau an A at the end of camp. Well, then what happens with Logan Couture? He's probably not terribly happy. And you know, Logan Couture is going to be here for a few more years. You don't know about Patrick Marleau, so maybe at the end, you know, it was kind of a situation where Pete said, "Look, we got to get some younger guys a little bit bigger leadership role. We think Logan is ready for it. We think, you know, Patrick is, you know, we'll talk to Patrick and see where he stands." But so yeah, it was a tough situation for Pete. No doubt about it.
Curtis, you've mentioned Logan Couture a few times, and he's been out a month now, and I know you wrote about it, read your blog yesterday in the San Jose Mercury News about how he's not going to rush the healing process. How badly do they need Logan Couture back, considering they've only won 4 of their last 12 games, the power play is last in the NHL, and just considering everything he offers at all ends of the rink?
Oh, there's no question that they really miss him. I mean, they not only the power play, but, you know, him being, you know, the second line center kind of helps slot everybody else in their proper spots. I mean, they had Tomas Hertl there for a number of games after Couture got hurt up into that position. He played well, but what it did was that it really affected the bottom two lines in their production. So if you get Couture back, you know, you could have him on a line with Ward and Marleau, and you can have Tomas Hertl back on a line with Tommy Wingles and, you know, either Matt Nieto or Jonas Donskoy. So they miss him on the power play. There's no doubt about it. I mean, the numbers speak for themselves. But also, they really miss him 5-on-5 because his absence affects pretty much all four lines.
Curtis Pashelka covers the San Jose Sharks for the San Jose Mercury News. Curtis, really appreciate your time this afternoon. Thanks very much for joining us to talk about the Sharks and Patrick Marleau.
You got it. Anytime.
Take care, Curtis.
Have fun in Buffalo tonight.
Thanks, Curtis. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290. Fortunately, we still haven't grown up here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday afternoon, November the 14th, the Jets and the Predators, 6
p.m. I'm shocked
you
actually know what that song is.
Yeah, you and me both. I think I know it from my CD of from the American Pie soundtrack, which is a depressing comment in so many different levels, I got to say. Anyways, the Jets and the Predators, 6 p.m. tonight on TSN 1290. Bayak, Edmonds, Nighty, they'll have the call for the game on this fine radio station. H&L following us, and then Rick Ralph in with the Jets pre- and post-game show. Some more trade rumors from around the NHL, and this one sort of came out of left field as far as I'm concerned. Here's the TSN insider to trading guys talking about Matt Duchene of the Colorado Avalanche.
Never heard Dreger sound that good.
Trading Matt Duchene. Is there something to this?
Two things need to be said about the Ottawa Senators right now. That is, number one, they're not very happy with the way they're playing. Number two, Brian Murray did tell general managers at the meetings this week that he is open for business. In particular, would like to trade a defenseman. Now, Erik Karlsson's not available. Guys like Jared Cowan, Patrick Wierkosz are all potential guys that could be out there.
Matt Duchene.
First of all, isn't Ottawa always open for business?
It seems like they've always been.
And isn't Bob McKenzie's wife supposed to be reading those?
Yeah. Did you watch that video? That was a funny one.
During the intermission.
Oh yeah, it was on during the intermission of Thursday's Jets game. It was a funny video at the very least. We'll talk about. We'll leave it there. You know, I don't get what the Colorado Avalanche are doing as a franchise. And we'll be joined next segment by Adrian Dater, who's covered that team, and he's now the national hockey writer for Bleacher Report. He knows that franchise inside and out. He's covered them for so many years. But, you know, why all of a sudden is Matt Duchene available in a trade after they've dealt away Ryan O'Reilly this past offseason? And every other team in the NHL is desperate for centermen, and you're trading away two centermen in the course of, you know, less than 6 months?
I think he's on the trading block because they're seventh in the Central Division, and they need to turn the season around, guys. And Matt Duchene's an excellent player. He was at the Olympics for Canada in 2014. There's a good chance he's going to be part of the World Cup team. He might be at the Olympics in 2018. Mm-hmm. So I think it's pretty simple. Now, why are you trading one of your best players, a guy who was a top five pick 5 years ago? Yeah, it's a little bit surprising, Drew, because the big move, as you mentioned, was trading Ryan O'Reilly to Buffalo, and they got Grigorenko, and they got Zadorov, who's in the AHL right now. That trade hasn't worked out, unfortunately, how they would have liked. So,
well, did anybody think that trade was going to work out immediately this year? I mean, did anybody think that you know Zadorov was ready to step in and be a top two or top four defenseman?
Well, I don't know if he'd be a top two or top four defenseman, but I mean, they obviously thought enough of him to make the trade, right? Huh. And he played for Buffalo last year. So, I mean, we could sit here and say, that, you know, all day long if we think that he was going to be a top two or top four defenseman, but at the very least, they thought he was going to be a top six defenseman. That's why he was in the lineup.
Fine. But, I mean, if Matt Duchene is...
Nobody, I don't think, saw this poor start coming. I'm not saying that everybody thought the Colorado Avalanche were going to tear up the NHL. I had them as a playoff team. I thought they'd be better. They've got a lot of firepower there, but I still think that defense is not good enough. And Semyon Varlamov has regressed as a goaltender, and I think those are big issues there. Mm-hmm. And again, the issue is Patrick Waugh playing the right way with the team that he's got? Because he likes to play that wide-open style, mm-hmm. right? And I don't think he has the good enough defense to do that.
I have trouble believing that unless you're getting, I don't know, a number one clear-cut top flight defenseman back for Matt Duchene, that you're better off trading a 25-year-old, a guy who's not yet 25. He'll be 25 in January.
What do you think they're trading him for?
I would assume it's got to be a top flight defenseman, right?
Right. So what would that be?
I mean, it's
not going to be on Ottawa.
It's not on Ottawa unless they're trading Erik Karlsson, and that's a non-starter.
They're trading Erik Karlsson.
Of course they're not trading Erik Karlsson because it's crazy.
Who has a top-end defenseman that they're actually going to trade? Young, 25, 23 to 27.
Nobody
trade for Matt Duchene. With due respect to Matt Duchene, whose game I like.
He's an excellent player. I mean, he was on the Olympic team. He's a first line winger in the NHL.
I can't think of anybody.
Ideally, if you acquire him, you're playing him at center, is he?
Or a first line forward.
Skill wise, yeah, you certainly could argue that. Certainly. I think sometimes he's difficult to play with. He plays the game so fast, at times I think it's tough to keep up. Likes to have the puck on his stick. But Ezzy, I agree with you. First line skill, first line talent. I mean, so who's acquiring him?
I can't believe anybody is, because I don't know who they're giving up. I mean, I just don't I mean, you look around the NHL, and sure, everybody would want Matt Duchene. But I don't know who's got the assets necessary, you know.
Well, I mean, what you're talking about trading is, I mean,
a lot of teams would want Matt Duchene.
I think you're looking at, okay, is it Anaheim saying, all right, we'll give you Cam Fowler to solidify your left side and another really good young player, and we're going to take a guy like that to infuse speed into our roster if we can make it work cap-wise. Okay, there. I mean, if you're looking at other teams, I don't think there are a ton of teams. You're not going back to the well with Buffalo, likely.
Right?
I mean, Calgary has an overabundance of talented defensemen, but who are they trading? Remember, you have Eric Johnson and Tyson Barry locked up, right? So, and Tyson Barry's not locked up yet, but he will be, I assume.
Yeah, Barry, he's an RFA. He's not going anywhere
anyway.
Right,
but Johnson and Barry are your right-side guys, okay? You assume that Zadorov is going to come up and play the left side in your top four eventually. So you're looking for a left-side guy. That's why Cam Fowler comes to mind, okay? I mean, Ryan Murray's in a healthy scratch in Columbus. Is he a guy? But it can't just be a Fowler or a Ryan Murray. It has to be something else. And if you're Colorado, you don't want another pick. You want a guy you can play now, you know, to your point, Drew. So where else are you looking to get that guy who's going to fill that spot?
You know, another team that comes to mind again at the top of my head, Philadelphia Flyers. You know, they're a bit top heavy. They've got a lot of young defensemen to give up if you're looking at defensemen.
It's not a bad idea, is it?
Potentially they give up. I mean, we could go alphabetically through the NHL right now, and you could find a lot of teams that aren't scoring as many goals as they'd like, and they would move not just a defenseman, but they'd move one of their forwards or prospects to get a guy like Matt Duchene. I mean, Matt Duchene, his combination of speed and skill is top-notch, and he's struggling right now on the Colorado Avalanche. He's not struggling as much as some others, but
he's got 11 points in 16 games.
The reason why his name is coming up is because they're not doing well, and anytime you have a team that is not meeting internal expectations like the Colorado Avalanche. The Colorado Avalanche didn't think they'd be seventh in the Central. I think
also,
they knew
who else
that
do you have to trade, Ezzy?
Well, let me ask this question. If you
right?
trade...
Who else do you have to trade? Seriously.
Like, who else is appealing?
Yeah.
Well, Nathan MacKinnon, I mean, people
you're
are still...
You're trading MacKinnon, and Landeskog's your 22-year-old center. I mean, captain.
Right.
Right, Ezzy? So who else are you trading? And that's why I think his name's out there. I don't think he's going anywhere right now.
Yeah, Nathan MacKinnon is not being traded.
Yeah.
Mark my words on that one. And I would agree with Landeskog. He's the captain. And there's other players that I think they don't have any desire to trade. I mean, Tyson Barrie's an excellent defenseman.
Right.
Eric Johnson, I don't think they're moving him.
They just signed him.
They just acquired Zadorov and Grigorenko. I mean, I don't. Jerome Iginla, I don't think they signed him last year to move him.
But I think he goes if they're terrible. If they continue to be terrible, he goes.
He says in the Adrian Dater article he's going to, you know, that they've approached him and he's not going to accept any sort of trade this year.
Yeah,
for family reasons. No, of course, push comes to shove if you're out of it.
Okay, so hold on. And you go in March and the deadline is.
You're right. If it's in February, February 20th and you're completely out of it and, you know, it's only a couple months.
You signed and Colorado obviously they're going to pay you because you thought they were going to take the next step. Mm-hmm. You were in Boston, you were in Pittsburgh, and you're in Calgary. You've been so close to the cup. What, Boston, you went to game 6 of the finals? Calgary went to game 7?
Yeah.
You're going to call it and say, no, I don't want to go to Montreal or wherever they need me to try and win a cup? I don't believe that.
You know, and that's a very valid point from your end.
Did he get a no move anyways? I mean, the guy got a 3-year deal at 5.3 a year when he was 36, 37 years old. That's crazy.
I think part
isn't
of the
that contract a no move?
I think part of that problem in Colorado right now.
Apparently it's not.
Apparently part of the problem in I think part of the problem, and they can't really deal with it, is Patrick Waugh. I'm not sure that he's that good of an NHL head coach.
Well, he wins the division in his rookie year.
Yeah, right? Fine.
And we know how good the team was last year. And
terrible.
And they aren't much better this year.
So?
And so, you know, Patrick Waugh, I think his job is safe because of, he has some management responsibilities and his relationship with Joe Sakic.
That's right.
That's
okay,
why.
Hold on a second, Drew.
Okay.
Did you have the Avs make the playoffs any of those 3 years?
Last year, I believe I did.
Okay, the year before?
No.
Okay, so let's reverse it. Say, you know, you had 1-for-2, he makes it.
Sure.
They go to game 7 against the Wild. No Tyson Berry injury.
Yeah.
Possibly win that series. Okay. Regardless of the stats, obviously, we're in their favor and the averages and all that. Okay.
Yeah.
That's 1 of 2 years. Okay. This year, did you happen to make the playoffs?
I don't believe I did. No.
So how bad of a coach is he?
I did.
Right. You did. But how bad of a coach is he?
Well, you look at his record for the last 100 games.
You look at the projections that we had for this team ever making the playoffs. He hasn't made the playoffs. This is what we thought. Tell me when he gets a good team, whether I think it's actually going to make the playoffs.
They just don't seem to be advancing. They don't seem to be progressing.
You look at the defense that I mean, I know he's part of it. He's part of the management.
Yeah.
The defense he had last year, those guys came with the puck out of their own zone.
Sure. Defense is certainly a problem.
Maybe like to look at the coaches. Give him some players.
Valid
Patrick Waugh played on teams with Chris Chelios, Eric Desjardins, Foot, Blake, Bork. Now you give him these guys on the back end. He had probably a 2 NHL defenseman last year.
Yeah.
The way Brad Stewart was playing, he had Johnson and Barry. That was it. The rest of the guys were AHL fill-ins. Then Zach Redmond came here, couldn't crack the Jets, goes over there, is playing like fairly significant minutes. Nate Ginnan, they acquired Brandon Gormley, him and Stefan Elliott. Brandon Gormley's not a great skater. Stefan Elliott and him were swapped because both of them busted out. Nick Holden, look at the defense.
It's not a good defense. I'm not arguing with you.
I'm not saying Patrick was the best coach, but it's hard to tell considering the fact that he's got no talent on the back end, and he doesn't have a ton of talent on the third and fourth lines.
I think you also have to factor in, too, here. They've won their last two games. They're only 5 points out of a playoff spot right now. It's still very early.
Yeah. First games of a seven-game road trip.
Right. So if they turn it around here, I don't think these Duchesne trade rumors persist.
I agree with that.
I just don't see how they improve. I mean, maybe, you know, if somebody gives them a king ransom for Matt Duchesne, then, yeah, maybe they do. But I don't see anybody as rarely as young stud centers are being traded. Young stud defensemen are being traded even
yes,
less often.
That's absolutely true.
Let's head to break. When we come back, Adrian Dater from BleacherReport.com is going to join us, talk some more about the Avs. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290. In the afternoon, Saturday the 14th of November here in beautiful Winnipeg. Drew Mandel alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest NHL news and Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Adrian Dater is the NHL national columnist from BleacherReport.com. He recently wrote about the Colorado Avalanche. Adrian, appreciate your time this afternoon, and thanks very much for joining us here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Adrian, are you there?
I can barely hear you guys.
Okay, well, we're going to work on the connection a little bit. Rory's doing his magic. That any better?
A little bit better. A little bit.
Okay, well, you let us know if you can't hear us, and we might have to call you back and get a better connection.
I think I can hear you. I think I got you now.
Excellent. Adrian, thanks for joining us. Welcome to the program this afternoon. Obviously brought you on to talk about the Colorado Avalanche, your recent article on BleacherReport.com about the Avs, and sort of simultaneous to your column coming out, we hear rumors that maybe Matt Duchesne is on the trade block and available from the Colorado Avalanche. First, let's start with those rumors. You know, do you believe that Matt Duchesne truly is available to a team that comes calling?
At the right price, at a really good price, I think he would be. I know there's been some sort of backpedaling by the Avs and you know, a couple other, I think, media people want to just try to disprove it. But all I know is that what I said, what Darren Dreger said, what Pierre LeBrun said, and what Bob McKenzie said, what I said at first was, and when they backed it up, was that, you know, this team has been struggling, and they're not going to put up with another, you know, 28th place finish or anything this year without trying to do something about it. And if that means trading a Matt Duchesne to get to change things up, maybe get different parts of a team that they think they might need, different you know, players and positions and things like that, then they could do it. Now, since I wrote that piece, they won a nice game in Boston the other night. And what I also said in the piece was a nice road trip on this 7-game road trip that they're on for 14 days. A good road trip makes all the rumors go away. You know, it's really this subhead to my Duchene story would be, this is it for the Avs on this road trip. They need to do something on this trip, or else there's going to be changes. So they're off to a great start. They're 2-0 going into tonight's game in Montreal. And, you know, if they keep it up, then all's happy and everything's a good ship lollipop again for the Colorado Avalanche if they keep winning.
Adrian, aside from Matt Duchene, is there any indication that the Colorado Avalanche would look at moving any other players?
Listen, when I talked to Joe Sakic, I said, all right, Joe, I assume there's three or four untouchable players you got on your team. You know, Duchene, McKinnon, maybe Varlamov, Landeskog. And he said, nope, there's only one untouchable right now. That's Nathan McKinnon. So that's when I got, that's when I wrote the story. You know, only one untouchable in the Colorado Avalanche, that's Nathan McKinnon. Everybody else could be available. And that's what I believe. But I don't think that it's, you know, Joe doesn't want to blow up his team. He doesn't want to do that. He thinks he's got young talent. But he has to do something if this team is still, you know, it was 4-9-1 going on this road trip, and they look terrible a lot of times. They look better since then. So, you know, Joe could be trying to light a fire under his boys by coming out and saying something to me a little bit in public. That's possible, and that's fine with me. I mean, I'm happy to be, as long as I get the get the story. I don't care if he wants to use me a little bit. He really wants to get it going, though, and he'll try anything he has to. But listen, they've made trades before; they'll make them again. There's no, you know, Matt Duchene is not, you know, God or anything. Wayne Gretzky got traded too, so yeah, I think it's possible he could be traded. It just depends on a lot of things going forward.
Adrian, you've seen, I mean, you obviously covered the Avs for many years. Pierre Lacroix, I mean, did things differently than Joe Sakic is, and Greg Sherman kind of in the middle. Who knows exactly who was running stuff then, but does sound management make a decision that could transform a franchise, say, by trading a guy like Matt Duchene based upon a 5 or 10 game road trip or sample?
Well, Matt Duchene, this is his 7th year, okay? Mm-hmm. So, you know, when do you start saying to yourself, you know, what do we have here? You know, do we have a
That's
player
fair.
Who can help us win, or do we just have a nice player? And, you know, they haven't won anything with Matt Duchene. They've never won a playoff series with Matt Duchene in 7 years. So that's not the goal of this organization, is to be better than that. And that's what they expect. Patrick Waugh, Joe Sakic, they're not in it to just make the playoffs. They want to win a Stanley Cup. And if they don't think they can get it with these guys that have been around for a long time, then, you know, why not? Why not? Why wouldn't it be possible? Is it overreaction? It might be. But they also have Nathan McKinnon as the number one center. I think they have a good center in Carl Soderberg, who could be a good number two center as he gets more used to this team. They have other, you know, they have John Mitchell, who's a good center. Center is really not that problem. Defense is their problem. And who how are you going to get your defense better? Well, you could hope for a draft pick, but they've you know, there's nobody out there who's, I mean, personally, I thought they were going to take Seth Jones a few years ago in the draft, mm-hmm. And they didn't. They took McKinnon. But, you know, defense is still the issue with this team. So how are you going to get a great defenseman maybe in a trade? Well, you're going to have to trade a guy like Duchene or Varlamov, in my opinion. Otherwise, nothing else is really going to matter. And that's what they, you know, may be thinking of doing. That's one of their only options are.
What about Gabriel Landeskog? You mentioned him. I guess he wouldn't be an untouchable. You didn't just mention him in the most recent answer, Adrian, but is he a guy, I realize he's captain and obviously just has the recent suspension, but overall he's got a fairly, well, maybe something tad high cap hit for the production, but 5.5 per year signed long term. Is he a guy you could possibly see them moving?
Sure. I mean, he could have been on that list too. I mean, like I said, Sakic said there's only one untouchable on our team, Nathan MacKinnon. So, yeah, MacKinnon, by definition, that means Landeskog too. I don't think they would trade him because they want to stay bigger as a team. He's a winger. I think they want to stay big on the wings. The only place they think they may have some surplus still is center. So, I would have put my odds at them trading Duchene, and I said something on Twitter, like, I think they will trade Duchene. I kind of phrased that a little bit badly, which has happened to me on Twitter before on occasion. And I don't necessarily believe they will trade Duchene. I think it was definitely a possibility all along, I was kind of trying to say. And but I still would have put the odds at a lower percentage. He's a talented young player, obviously, and you got to be really sure what you're going to get back if you trade a guy like him. I mean, he bleeds burgundy and blue. Mm-hmm. He loves the team. He's taken salary discounts to stay, so that should matter too. And I think, but there's a lot of pressure on this team. Joe Sakic and Patrick Waugh, if they're lottery team again, that's gonna be very unacceptable to them and to ownership who hired them. And losing, that's what makes things happen. You lose games, things change. That's what we may have here too.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our guest is Adrian Dater. Adrian is the national NHL writer for BleacherReport.com. We're talking about the Colorado Avalanche. And Adrian, you mentioned that the problem is really on the back end, on the defense. Nikita Zadorov comes over in the offseason from Buffalo as the big chip in the Ryan O'Reilly trade. The fact that Zadorov hasn't been able to crack the Avalanche lineup on a regular basis, has that really put a crimp into the entire plans of the Avalanche, especially as it relates to their defense so far this season?
Well, I think if they say no to that, they're in denial. They got this guy and they talked him up as one of the great young defensemen coming up in the league. And now he's in San Antonio playing for the Rampage. But just by definition, that's a disappointment. Now, since they put him down there, they've been saying it's a more of a we always knew he was a long-term project, and this is not a blow to his career development at all. We got to play him, and he's got to learn more. Patrick Waugh said something about how he thought it was a mistake by Buffalo to have played him so young, but if he believes that, then why did he? Why did he acquire him in the first place and send one of his better players to get him? It's no question it's a disappointment for the fans and the team. I think that he's back in San Antonio right now. They played him on the top four to start the season. They clearly thought he was good enough to do that. And then he did have some bad games, but to answer your question, the larger point, yeah, it's definitely not what the ideal scenario with the Avs. We're going to say to their fans, well, the main guy we got for O'Reilly, very good player, is not good enough to play on our hockey club right now. He's playing in San Antonio, so not how the script they wanted to go, I'm sure.
Adrian, looking ahead, quite ahead, to February 27th, 2016, Coors Field in Denver, the Colorado Avalanche are going to host Detroit for a Stadium Series game. And I remember reading your book years ago, Blood Feud, about that Avalanche Red Wings rivalry. It's a great read for anybody who hasn't read it. What are you most looking forward to in that Stadium Series game?
Well, thanks for reading the book and the kind words. What am I looking forward to? I mean, I guess I'm still, I definitely think it'll be fun to see hockey under the lights of Colorado and Coors Field, number one. But, this alumni game, I gotta admit, it's the one I'm probably going to want to watch more than the real game. Just because I covered those teams and how great they were, and you know, I know they're going to be older and slower, and I'm not here to see probably a brilliant hockey game, but I just will die of curiosity to see how guys like Peter Forsberg and Sakic and Waugh and Claude Lemieux and Steve Yzerman, who said he'll play, you know, play against each other. And I'm sure it'll be a fun-loving game. It not, you know, I mean, I don't think there's going to be any blood on the ice. But
Patrick Waugh's not going to fight Mike Vernon.
You never quite know. I think there's still like a
Claude Lemieux's playing, you know, Adrian. Yeah, so.
Is Chris Draper suiting up for Detroit?
Yeah, he is. And, you know, so you never quite know, right? There's going to be a little bit of doubt whether these teams really did hate each other just when they played. And it was a great rivalry. And not only was it a great bloody rivalry and fun, you know, I don't, not to make light of blood or anything on the ice, but, you know, they fought hard. And not only was it great in that sense for the people who love good physical fighting hockey, but it was brilliant hockey itself and skill. So combine those two elements, just made for an unbelievable rivalry, and the reason why I wrote that book. And you know, I think when I wrote the book I did up the numbers, and I think, you know, even if there were guys who were just passing through for a year or so, guys like Dave Andrechuk, who played in rivalry, you know, accounted like 20 Hall of Famers from those 6 years of teams.
Wow.
You know, that's
yeah.
quite a lot. That's a lot of good players. And so I'm definitely looking forward to the alumni game. I'm very interested to see how, you know, let's say there is a hard hit somehow. But I just think maybe those old emotions will kick in. We'll see. We might see something. But listen, I'm sure, you know, the people I've talked to still, the Drapers, the McCartys, who were in the rivalry, even Claude Lemieux, you know, they hated each other at the time. I think they've come to respect each other so much since then and realized how great it was. And there's, you know, that's usually what happens with a lot of old rivalries like that. You know, it sort of morphs into a mutual respect. So I think that's probably what we'll see in that kind of game. But hope maybe there'll be a little sucker punch in there. We'll see.
We'll find out in February if time indeed does heal all wounds. Adrian Dater is the NHL's national columnist for BleacherReport.com. Adrian, really appreciate your time and your insights into the Avalanche this afternoon.
Guys, thanks for having me.
Thanks Adrian.
For having me. Talk to you later.
Talk to you soon. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. One final segment this Saturday afternoon here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's brought to you by the Jewish Foundation of Manitoba. Philanthropy is a key pillar in a strong community. That's why the Jewish Foundation of Manitoba is proud to have provided funding to over 200 organizations in the past year. For more information about the Jewish Foundation of Manitoba, visit jewishfoundation.org or call 204-477-7520.
Rapid fire
for this Saturday afternoon. Colorado Avalanche forward Gabriel Landeskog was suspended for 2 games for his hit to the head on Bruins forward Brad Marchand. Marchand was fined $5,000 for roughing Landeskog in retaliation. Are you okay with the decisions handed down here by the NHL's Department of Player Safety?
Yeah, Marchand punched Landeskog after that. Yeah, I thought 2 games was fair or to be expected. You could argue that he should probably get 3 or 4 games. It was definitely a deliberate check to the head, and Marchand, the puck wasn't near him, so I had no problem with it, Drew.
No problem with that. I mean, you know, I know it's Marchand and people, he angers people, but you still got to keep your composure.
Yeah. Former Los Angeles Kings forward Mike Richards has been keeping in shape by skating with the OHL's Kitchener Rangers, his former junior team. When his legal situation is resolved, do you expect that he will earn another NHL contract?
Yeah, probably. I mean, he's smart enough to play on your fourth line. Can he skate enough? Can he get his pace and his speed up to a level that will allow him to play at a you know, higher up on the chain? We'll see. But I think he's still smart enough to play on somebody's fourth line and play in a penalty killing situation and different things like that.
Yeah, I do think Mike Richards will be back in the NHL. I think it's only a couple of years ago that he won a Stanley Cup with the LA Kings, to Richie's point. I do think that you know, he does need to improve his conditioning, but short answer, I do think he'll get another NHL contract.
On Thursday, additional names were announced for the coaching and scouting staff for the Team Europe entry in the upcoming World Cup of Hockey. Aside from Jets head coach Paul Maurice.
And by the way, there's a quick aside here. It's not a side. It's not a point. You got all these coaches from Canada, U.S. coaching different teams. I mean, it's just a bunch of players wearing jerseys. Who cares? Paul Maurice is coaching which team again?
Team Europe.
He's Canadian, right?
Yes.
Like, I don't mind when they're coaching like Switzerland 10 years ago and they have nobody and they're trying to make them look at least serviceable. But now you're coaching all these you're coaching Canadian-American guys. You're coaching teams that are okay and put together in Europe. And it's like, who cares who wins? You got Canadians one place. You got Americans and Canadians on the other team. I mean,
so I'm going to assume that my question, which was, do you think Team Europe should have more of a European coaching and scouting staff than currently assembled? You're going to answer yes to that question.
Why don't we have somebody from every country that there's a player on? You have a 10-person coaching staff.
Ezzy, do you have anything resembling that rant?
Yeah, I would agree with Rich. I think there should probably be more European coaches in addition to Nedimansky and Peter Bondra. After all, it is a European team, but obviously this is how they've decided to put together the team. So.
You know who their head coach is, Rich.
No, actually, who is it again?
It's Ralph Kruger.
Yeah. Okay. Well, why don't you put him a head coach of an actual country as opposed to a mix of teams?
On Wednesday night, Alex Ovechkin had 15 shots on goal versus Detroit, the most shots on goal without scoring in almost 48 years. None of his shot attempts were blocked, and three other attempts missed the net. Is Ovechkin's performance on Wednesday night an impressive one, a statistical oddity, or some hybrid of both?
It's probably a hybrid of both. He's always shot a lot in the NHL, so it's a little bit surprising that one of those didn't go in.
Yeah, I mean, it's both true. You have to be tremendously talented to be able to get that many shots off, and then to not have any of them go in, and he had got good chances, too.
Yeah. Since starting the season 0-3-1, the New Jersey Devils have won 9 of their past 12 games, a .750 winning percentage. Mm-hmm. They are now fourth in the Metropolitan Division with 19 points. The Phoenix Coyotes, the Arizona Coyotes, have the same number of points in the Pacific Division. We'll see them here in Winnipeg next Saturday. Which of those two teams' performances is most impressive to start the season?
I mean, the Devils. I think the Pacific Division's just been so bad.
Yeah, it's impressive for both teams to be doing as well as they can. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see if they can keep it up. Because as Richie mentioned, the Pacific isn't very good. Yeah. The Metropolitan Division is better. But, you know, the Devils have always gotten good goaltending from Corey Schneider. The young defense is playing really well. And as far as Arizona goes, it's just awesome to see those two rookies, Domi and Duclair. They're fun to watch.
I have to scrap my second last question on rapid fire. Ryan Murray actually ended up playing last night for the Blue Jackets as they had a late injury situation. Yeah. Final question for rapid fire. A military robot performed the ceremonial puck drop prior to Wednesday's game between the Oilers and Ducks in Anaheim. If robots performing ceremonial puck drops is about to become a thing, which TV or movie robot would you most like to see perform a ceremonial puck drop in the future?
Drew, with questions like that, we should ask about the host robot that'll be here next week.
The host robot would probably do a better job than I did, for sure.
It's got to be the robot from Rocky.
There's a robot in Rocky?
Yeah.
I don't remember that.
Google it.
I believe you.
Cheers.
You seem very confident. I believe you.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And cheers.
No, not good enough. He's a bad boy.
I never seen something stink like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Richard, a cheer or a jeer, my friend?
Cheer goes to, I went to the Moose game last night. I had a great time. There's a great crowd there yesterday, and I want to talk more about actually what I saw on the ice on Tuesday's night show. We're on Tuesday this week.
Yeah.
But really a good atmosphere there, and the team came through against a really good Chicago Wolves squad, so I'll give a cheer to the Moose.
Ezra?
A cheer to Shea Weber, who I talked about earlier, playing in his 700th career game, all with one team. He's been one of my favorite defensemen for years now, so I'll give my cheer to Shea.
I'll wrap up cheers and jeers by cheering Nikolai Habibulin, who on Friday officially announced his retirement from professional hockey. We all remember him as a member of the Winnipeg Jets 1.0. Of course, he also won the Stanley Cup in Tampa Bay in 2004. So we all remember Nikolai Habibulin very well. So a cheer to him on the end of his playing career. That's it for this Saturday afternoon in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Big thanks to Adrian Dater from BleacherReport.com, Curtis Pashelka of the San Jose Mercury News, and Willie Donick, the National Predators play-by-play broadcaster. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download on iTunes. Search for the show, subscribe, and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. A big thank you to our sponsors, Keener Jerseys, the Jewish Foundation of Manitoba, Zappia Group Realty, Bernstein's Deli, Linden Market Dental Center, and Rumors Restaurant, and Comedy Club. Follow us on Twitter at IllegalCurve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. For producer Rory, for Ezra Ginsberg, for Richard Pollock, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Until Tuesday night with NHL This Week, we thank you for listening, and if it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.